This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala ashraf al-anbiya'i wa al-mursaleen. Nabina Muhammadin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Inshallah, today we're going to be speaking about the forbidden times with regards to the prayers and also issues related to the congregational prayer and praying in the masjid. We begin with the times that it's impermissible or prohibited to pray salawat. And the scholars, they categorized the forbidden times for a person to pray into three categories. The first category is from dawn until the sun has risen, based on narrations, to the height of a spear, which today scholars would estimate around 12 minutes after sunrise. So the first prohibited time for a person to pray would be from dawn, which is basically when Fajr begins, until the sun has completely risen. And once it's completely risen, about 12 minutes after sunrise, that's when it would be permissible for a person to pray. Now, of course, this doesn't include, of course, the fard salawat, fajr salah. You have to pray fajr salah. And it also doesn't include rak'atay fajr, the two rak'as prayed before fajr. If, for whatever reason, and we'll mention this as well, a person doesn't pray the two rak'ahs before Fajr, he can pray them after Fajr. So those are exceptions. But if a person had prayed Fajr, he's prayed the sunnah of Fajr before Fajr, and he prays Fajr, and he's just sitting in the masjid, for example, reading Quran, it's not permissible for him, or at home, it's not permissible or allowed for him to pray extra prayers, nawafil prayers, at that point in time, until the sun has completely risen, until the sun has completely risen. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said, إِذَا طَلَعَ الْفَجْرِ, when Fajr begins, فَلَا صَلَاةَ إِلَّا رَكَعَتَي الْفَجْرِ, then there is no salah except for the two rak'ahs of Fajr, meaning the two sunnahs from the rawatib, the two rak'ahs before Fajr. So that's the first category of salahs in which it would not be permissible for a person to pray them. The second category is the zawal time. What is the zawal time? It's before dhuhr, when the sun is at its highest point. So the sun rises from, what does the sun rise from? The east. Sun rises from the east, sets in the west, and it gets to a point where it's rising from the east, and it keeps on rising until it's at its highest point. Once it's at its highest point, at that point it's impermissible for a person to pray. So it's maybe 5-10 minutes, around that much, maximum. At that point, it's not permissible for a person to pray. And one of the ways a person can understand when it's zawal time is if there's no shadow. If there's no shadow at that point, that's zawal. Because before it reaches zawal, when the sun is rising from the east, there's going to be a shadow on the west side. And if the sun is going towards the west, there's going to be a shadow on the east side. So when it gets to the zawal point, which is the highest point that the sun can be at during the day, that's when it's not permissible for a person to pray. And it's called the zenith, or in Arabic, zawal. So at zawal time, it's not permissible for a person to pray. When we say not permissible for a person to pray, don't forget we're referring to extra prayers, nawafil prayers. And we'll go into detail, inshallah. But of course, if a person needs to pray fajr, maybe because he overslept, or he was, he completely forgot, or whatever the reason may be, it would be permissible for him to make up those prayers. But we're talking, generally speaking, extra prayers a person wishes to pray, nawafil prayers, not related to the salawat, which we will mention, inshallah, in a short while, it wouldn't be permissible for him to pray those. The third category of prayers which would be prohibited to pray at that time is the time from Asr prayer after Asr, until the sun has completely set. So from after Asr, of course, you can pray Asr, but you can't pray any other salawat, nawafil, extra prayers that you just want to pray after Asr Salah until the sun has completely set. Once the sun has completely set, which is basically what time? That's Maghrib time. So then after Maghrib, it would be permissible for a person to pray tatawwu prayers, you know, extra prayers, nawafil prayers, if he wishes to do so. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said, وَلَا صَلَاةَ بَعْدَ صَلَاةِ الْعَصْرِ حَتَّى تَغِيبُ. There is no salah after Asr Salah until the sun has set. There is no salah after Asr Salah until the sun has completely set. So those are the prayer times or the times in which it's prohibited for a person to pray. Now, it's permissible for a person to pray the following prayers in those prohibited times. The first one, which is the most obvious, is which prayers? Obligatory prayers. Of course, the obligatory prayers, it's permissible for you to pray. For example, like I said, a person wakes up late for Fajr and the sun has completely risen. Or let's say, yeah, the sun has completely risen. It's permissible for him to pray at that point in time. If a person overslept and he ends up waking up at Zawal time, let's say, you know, he didn't wake up for Fajr. He overslept, mashallah, he prayed like, you know, step 6-7 hours after Fajr. Okay, from 6 o'clock until like 12, 1 o'clock. And he wakes up at Zawal time exactly and he prays, it would be permissible. Because it's making up for the fara'id prayers. He's doing qada. Qada means making up for missed prayers. So it would be permissible to perform qada prayers, qada of the fara'id prayers, the fard prayers, the obligatory prayers, at those impermissible times, because that would be an exception. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, "Man nama ala salatin aw nasiyaha," whoever sleeps on a prayer, or he forgets to pray, "falyusalliha idha dhakaraha," then he should pray as soon as he remembers. "La kaffara laha illa dhalik," and he has no kaffara, no expiation except for that, meaning he has to make up the prayer, perform qada of that salah which he forgot to pray because of forgetfulness or if he overslept. So that's the first exception to a person praying at the prohibited times. The second exception are prayers which he's praying for a specific reason. And we'll explain this. Prayers he's praying for a specific reason. Meaning he's not just sitting and saying to himself, you know what, I just feel like praying 2 rakahs. Extra tatawwu prayers. There's a purpose behind it. For example, Salatul Janazah. It has a specific purpose. That would be permissible. For example, a person enters the masjid after Asr and he has to perform 2 rakahs before sitting down, based on the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that لَا يَجْلِسْ حَتَّى يُصَلِّيَ رَكَعَتَيْنَ. When a person enters the masjid, he shouldn't sit until he prays 2 rakahs. So based on that, if a person enters the masjid, he has to perform tahiyyat al-masjid, even if it's at those prohibited times. Salat al-Kusuf, the eclipse prayer. If it's prayed at that time, then that would also be permissible. رَكَعَتَيْ al-tawaf, the 2 rakahs you pray after you perform tawaf. Let's say, for example, a person does umrah in the morning, and by the time he finishes tawaf, okay, it's zawal time, and it coincides with his 2 rakahs after tawaf, is that permissible? That's permissible because it's for a specific purpose. It's for a specific reason. So the 2 rakahs after tawaf, 2 rakahs of wudu, scholars, they say that's for a specific purpose. The sunnah of 2 rakahs that a person prays after performing wudu, that would also be permissible for a person to pray salah in those prohibited times. Also, salatul istikhara, istikhara prayer. So these prayers, they're done for specific reasons. They're done for specific reasons. And if they're done for these specific reasons, and they're not just being done tatawwu'an, like optional prayers, just because he feels like he wants to pray, without any specific reason or purpose, then they would be permissible. So these prayers, you know, don't have a specific time. It's not like you have to pray, you know, the janazah prayer at a specific time, or tahiyyat al-masjid at a specific time in the day or the night. So the scholars, they say, these specific prayers are prayers دون التقييد بزمن, without any specificity with regards to its timing. There's no specific time to pray these salawat. And so these types of prayers, it's permissible to pray at those prohibited times. They're like the exceptions. Also, number three, qada of sunnat al-fajr. So number one, we said, qada of fard prayers. Qada of fard prayers. Number three is qada of sunnah prayers, the fajr sunnah. If a person, for example, doesn't pray the sunnah of fajr before fajr because he became late to pray the salah, for example, okay, he was going to the masjid and he misses the salah, the two rakahs before fajr, he misses them and he prays fajr, he can make up the two rakahs of fajr after fajr, even though they're supposed to be prayed before. He can make them up after Fajr if there was a specific reason. Also, narrations mention that the Prophet ﷺ, he made qada of the sunnah of Dhuhr after Asr. He made qada of the sunnah of Dhuhr after Asr. Which means, is it permissible for a person to make qada of other sunnah prayers after other salawat, after other fard prayers later on? The answer is yes, based on this hadith. The Prophet ﷺ, he made qada, he made up for the sunnah of dhuhr after asr. So if a person, for example, didn't pray the sunnahs of dhuhr, and then he prays asr, and he wants to make qada of the dhuhr sunnahs, for example, he can make qada of those sunnahs after asr. Likewise with fajr. A person didn't pray his fajr before, the two sunnahs of fajr before fajr, and he ends up praying them after fajr, that's permissible. So these three are the exceptions to a person not being permitted to pray at those prohibited times that we mentioned. So the exceptions to the general rule. But like I said, if a person was in the masjid after Fajr reading Quran, or he's in the masjid after Asr reading Quran, and he just decides to pray two rakahs, that wouldn't be permissible. Because that's the forbidden time, while the sun is setting, or when the sun is at its highest point, or when the sun is rising after Fajr, okay, until the sun has completely risen. So those times would be impermissible for a person to pray general salawat, except for the exceptions that we just mentioned. Moving on, inshallah, to the issue of praying in congregation and praying in the masjid, and the rewards and virtues of the masjid and praying in the masjid, and rulings of praying in the masjid as opposed to praying in the home, either in congregation or by oneself. So the salah in congregation is a virtuous salah, which is better than a person praying the obligatory prayers by himself. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, salatul jama'ah, congregational prayer, afdalu min salat al-fadhi, is better than the single prayer prayed by himself, bi 27 daraja, by 27 degrees. Meaning it's 27 times better for a person to pray in congregation as opposed to praying by himself. And the scholars, there's severe is the right word, but very intense differences of opinion with regards to the permissibility of, or the obligation of praying in the masjid. Is it something which is an obligation? Is it something which is not an obligation? There's differences amongst the scholars with regards to this issue that goes way back based on the narrations of the Prophet ﷺ that argue back and forth with regards to this issue. And scholars, some scholars will say it's wajib for every person to pray in the masjid. Others will say it's fard kifaya, meaning it's a communal obligation. As long as some are praying in the masjid, the obligation is lifted upon others. Others, they say, it's highly recommended for a person to pray in the masjid. It's important for us to first of all understand, regardless of what position a person may take, that praying in the masjid has so many virtues and so many benefits, putting aside the issue of whether or not it's obligatory. So, what are the benefits of praying in the masjid? First of all, when a person prays in the masjid, there's the cooperation and connection between Muslims and people cooperating with one another in that which is good by attending the masjid and praying salah in the masjid. You have the virtue and the benefit of love and mercy increasing between the Muslims when they come together in the masjid and they're praying side by side in the masjid, praying together in congregation, that a person won't obviously get if he's praying by himself. Also, the care and the concern that a person may have for his fellow Muslim brother or sister increases when he's frequenting the masjid, when he's in the masjid, when he's seeing other people in the masjid that he's familiar with, he gets to know other brothers and sisters he didn't know before. He finds out about their situations, what they're doing, you know, who they are, where they live, etc., etc. So you're essentially keeping in touch and keeping it up to date with the Muslim brothers and sisters in your community, and you get to know one another. And this also increases love, mahabba, you know, between the brothers and the sisters. And also, it brings the hearts closer together. You know, it brings the hearts closer together when you're praying together, you see people. And also, you get to know, as we said, about each other's circumstances and their situations. And that's beneficial. It's important for a person to know the circumstances and situation of the Muslim brothers and sisters who are praying in the masjid. Why? Because if they're in a situation where they need help, then you can help them. But if you don't frequent the masjid, you don't know, you know, who's living around the corner from you, you don't know who's, you know, local to you, you don't know what circumstances they may be in, they may be your neighbor, and you have no idea what's happening to them, what situation they're in. But when you come to the masjid, news goes around, they'll ask each other how they are, and he'll mention some issues that he's going through, and that's an opportunity for a person to, you know, help the person. Person may be sick, you come to the masjid, a person isn't in the masjid that you normally do see, you find out where he is, you find out he's sick, and you go and visit the sick. And that has its virtues and its blessings and its reward. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, when a person visits a sick person, 70,000 angels accompany the person. In the evening, likewise, and they make dua and they supplicate for that person who's making the effort to visit a sick person. So the point is here, lots of benefits of just simply attending the masjid. Also, you hear about a janazah prayer in the masjid after you just prayed the obligatory prayer. You came for the obligatory prayer, there happens to be a janazah prayer. And so you end up praying the janazah prayer. So you get the reward of the janazah prayer also. So you have lots of these virtues, lots of these benefits simply for attending the masjid, frequenting the masjid, getting to know the Muslim brothers and sisters who are frequenting the masjid also, their circumstances, the situation they may be in, problems they may be having, sicknesses, and all of these things bring the Muslim community together. Also helping those in distress. A person may have financial issues. You know, he may have other kinds of problems. So meeting them in the masjid, you're aware of the circumstances, either firsthand or you hear about their circumstances from other people, and so you want to help them, you know, financially or otherwise. So all of these things, they really show us the benefit of attending the masajid. Also, it's a sign of strength. It's a sign of strength amongst the Muslims. When you have a masjid, mashallah, and you have 1,000 people praying in the masjid, like we have 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people praying in the masjid, even more in the month of Ramadan, inshallah, we'll be witnessing Ramadan very soon. All of those things that are seen by non-Muslims, it's a sign of presence of the Muslims, it's a sign of the strength of the Muslims, it's a sign that we don't abandon our masajid, unlike, you know, the churches which are not being frequented in this country and other parts of the Western world. So it's a sign of the strength of the Muslim community, the strength of the Muslims, the unity of the Muslims staying together. Also, it's a means by which Allah will remove the enmity which shaitan places between people. So maybe you had an issue with somebody, but you see them all the time in the masjid. Okay, you had an argument with somebody, a fight with somebody. You see them all the time in the masjid when you come for salah. You know, the hearts, when you pray, are softened. You see them all the time. You see them, other people giving salam to them. And then, you know, they're giving salam to you, and you're going to be in the same community, in the same masjid, frequenting. And slowly those you know, that enmity and that hatred you may have had will slowly start to be removed, slowly start to dwindle away, and eventually you'll be able to speak to the brother again, associate with the brother, talk to the brother, and that that love will be renewed with regards to that brother that you maybe had issues with. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, what would he say when he would straighten the rows? لا تختلفوا فتختلف قلوبكم. Don't differ so that your hearts end up differing. So the importance of staying together, staying united, you know, getting to know one another, having the hearts together in the same masjid, together praying in congregation, and of course, you know, the virtue of praying together in congregation. Everybody's praying together. There's no distinction between a rich person and a poor person, a person from this country or that country, etc. You know, there's that virtue of everyone being the same, all praying in a straight line, praying in congregation. Also, from the benefits of praying in congregation is that a person is educated. So how many times do we have programs or talks or lectures? A person ends up just coming for the salah, and he may sit and he may benefit from a lesson or from a talk. And it wasn't his intention, but he's benefiting now. He's learning things he didn't learn before. He's learning things he didn't know. Also, as we said before, the hadith, you get more reward for praying in congregation. So when you enter the masjid and you pray in congregation, you're getting more reward. The other things attached to coming to the masjid, as we'll mention inshallah later, but a person may come early before he prays a congregational prayer. And he'll pray two rakahs before he sits down. He'll recite some Quran. He'll do some dhikr. After salah, he won't stand up and leave straight away. So at home, for example, when a person prays at home, he may pray, and literally he may sit for like 10 seconds, and then that's it. It's off, back to the rat race. Isn't it? Back to whatever he was doing. There's no time to sit and reflect, and that moment of peace and tranquility for a few minutes even. And there's narrations which speak about the virtue of sitting after the salah. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said that no man sits in his place after the salah except that the angels make dua for him. Making dua, asking Allah, Allahumma ghafir lahu, Allahumma arhamhu. Oh Allah, forgive him, oh Allah, have mercy on him. So that person, when he sits in his place after salah, the angels continue to make dua for him until he leaves his place. So you have all of these benefits, all of these virtues for praying in the masjid. Also, a person will be encouraged to do other good deeds. For example, he may come to the masjid for salah and he sees people praying the sunnahs before dhuhr. And he'll pray his sunnahs before dhuhr. He's sitting there maybe on his phone. He sees somebody else reading Quran. He hears them reading Quran. And so he'll decide, you know what, I'll read Quran instead of going on my phone. So people influence others and they're encouraged by others to also do good deeds. None of this happens in the house, or it's very rare at least, that a person will have that discipline in the home to be able to do these things. If that is the case, alhamdulillah, it's a blessing from Allah, but it's not something which is very common. So all of these benefits are available for the believer when he prays in the masjid. And as we said, there's 27 times more reward for a person when he prays in the masjid. So what is the ruling with regards to praying in the masjid? As we said, there's a very strong difference of opinion amongst the scholars. And it seems like Allah knows best that the general rule of praying in the masjid is that it's recommended. So the Malikiya and the Shafi'iya, they say that it's something which is recommended. And there's evidences on both sides. The scholars, they mention hadith of the Prophet ﷺ when he said, and we mentioned this hadith before, جُعِلَتْ لِيَ الْأَرْضُ مَسْجِدًا وَطَهُورًا. The whole earth has been made a place of sajda, a place of prostration, a place to pray. And other narrations which mention that two companions, they came to the masjid and they didn't pray in congregation. And so the Prophet ﷺ asked them, why didn't they pray? They said, we've already prayed in our homes. We already prayed in our homes. And so the Prophet ﷺ, he said to them, if you pray in your homes, we'll mention this hadith later, if you pray in your homes and you come to the masjid, then join the jama'ah, join the congregation, and you'll still get the reward of a sunnah, a nafal prayer, an optional prayer. So you shouldn't just stand, you should offer the a congregational prayer that's taking place, you shouldn't disassociate from the congregation. So how does it show us it's permissible for a person to pray at home? Because these two people, they prayed at home. The Prophet ﷺ didn't tell them to repeat the prayer. He didn't say your prayer was invalid. He said that your prayer in the masjid with the congregation would be considered a sunnah prayer. So their prayer wasn't rejected by the Messenger of Allah ﷺ, and other narrations which are mentioned, other evidences which are mentioned by the scholars. And the majority of the scholars, the Jumhur, the majority of the scholars consider it a sunnah to pray in the masjid. Of course, having said that, like we already mentioned, the enormous virtues and benefits of praying in the masjid, even if it's just simply to raise the symbol of the masjid in this community, in this country. You know, we need to have a connection to the masajid, because we don't want to be in a situation where masajid are closed down, or there's threats of masjids, being shut down, or being, for whatever reason, something happens, and then they use excuses to try to close masajid. When they see many, many people, hundreds of people attending the masajid and praying in the masjid, that's something which hopefully will be a means by which they'll be dissuaded to try to, close the masjid or try to shut down any masjid that may be around or available in this country. So lots of reasons why we should frequent the masajid. But of course, if a person does pray in the home, then it is something which he'll be rewarded for. But of course, the reward won't be the same. Unless he prays in jama'ah in the home. If he prays in jama'ah, of course, he'll get the reward of praying in congregation. So the next question is, what constitutes a congregation? What constitutes a group by which a person will earn the reward of 27 times more reward as opposed to when he prays by himself? And the scholars differ again, but it seems like if a person prayed with one more person, one of them being the imam, the other person being the one following the imam, that would be considered a congregation. That would be considered a jama'ah. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said to one of the companions, or two of the companions, he said to them, "Walya ummakuma akbarukuma." And anyone who's familiar with Arabic, the alif at the end, "Walya ummakuma akbarukuma," the hadith means, one of you should lead whoever is the oldest from amongst you. But this isn't referring to plural, like three people or four people. It's referring to dual. So in the Arabic language, you have singular, you have plural, and you also have dual. So this is the dual form. The Prophet ﷺ is talking to two people. And he's saying, "Wal ya ummakuma akbarukuma." The oldest of you two should lead the salah. The other one should follow. Meaning, he's saying, one of you should be the imam, one of you should be praying behind the imam or praying beside the imam, because it's two people. In that case, that shows us, that's evidence that a congregation can consist of only two people. So the minimum that a congregation requires for a person to earn the reward of 27 times more good deeds would be two. Also, it's permissible for women to pray in the masajid as long as permission is given to them by their husbands, and also under the condition that they don't show their beauty and their adornments when they come to the masjid, and they're not mixing with the men. And Ramadan, Taraweeh, as much as we try to make effort to separate brothers and sisters, you do get sometimes issues of people coming with false intentions. SubhanAllah, they come with other intentions, and SubhanAllah, you see Coventry Road, mashallah, like full of people and stores and marketplaces, and it's like a day out for them every night. They go there, they're probably telling the parents and the families, "We're going to the Masjid Green Lane to pray," and then they go there and they're like having parties on Coventry Road and eating all the food there. So a person needs to have, the correct intention. A person needs to think about why he's coming to the masjid and what he's doing here, especially in the month of Ramadan. He needs to have the right state of mind and attain the reward and the benefit of praying in the masjid, as opposed to just going out and wasting his time. So as long as they come and they're not showing their adornments and they're not mixing with men, and of course this day and age, vice versa as well. There's fitna on both sides. But the point is here, with regards to the women, it is permissible for them to come to the masajid. And of course, their safuf, their rows are separate to that of the men. And also, it's of course permissible for them to enter the masajid and to benefit from the lectures and programs and talks, as long as they're given permission by their husbands. And the prayers of the women are prayed in congregation, but they're separate from the congregation of the men. So they don't pray, you know, shoulder to shoulder, feet to feet with the brothers. Okay, it's a separate congregation, either at the back in some masajid, like the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's masjid, the women will pray in the back, or of course, they have a separate area in most masajid. So they have a separate congregation that's following the imam, but they'll have a separate congregation praying there. Another issue is also raised with regards to praying in congregation. Which masjid would be better for a person to pray in? So let's say he has a selection of masajid he can go to. This may be the masjid that's one of the options, and this masjid may be a bit further away. He has another masjid which is closer. He has another masjid which maybe isn't as popular. Of course, providing they're all upon the sunnah. Which masjid does he choose to go to? The scholars, they say, the best masjid for him to go to is the one that doesn't have لا تقام فيه صلاة الجماعة إلا بحضوره, that won't have a congregational prayer unless he goes there and prays there. Let's say there's a masjid that's almost abandoned. Like no one's praying there. You know, the imam is by himself, just one person. There's no congregation praying there. For whatever reason, you know, like no hardly any Muslims there or whatever the case may be. And you decide to pray there, that's the best masjid for you to pray in, because you're reviving and maintaining the Muslim community and the community in the masjid, the congregation in the masjid, because of your attendance at that masjid. So if there's a masjid in your area, even if it's not in your area and it's further out, you would get the reward because the reason why the congregational prayer is taking place in that specific masjid. You're basically responsible for maintaining the congregational prayer in that masjid. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, إِنَّمَا يَعْمُرُ مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ مَنْ آمَنَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ, that verily the ones who maintain the masajid of Allah are those who believe in Allah and those who believe in the last day. So Allah is praising those who maintain the masajid, meaning they attend the masjid, they keep the congregation of the prayers going in those masajid. After this, what are the best masajid for a person to pray in? Those that he prays in where he feels the most khushu. Those masajid where he feels the most khushu in his heart, those are the next best masajid that he should visit after the masajid where congregational prayers won't take place until he or unless he attends. So the places where he has most khushu, where he prays. It could be here, it could be another masjid, whichever masjid he feels most at ease, most at peace, and he feels like there's khushu in his heart and he's more focused, he's more attentive in the salah, etc. Those masajid would be the best masajid for him to attend. After this, those masajid which are closest to him. So number three, basically, are those masajid which are closest to him, based on a narration by Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu an. Ali radiallahu an, he would say, لا صلاة لجار المسجد إلا في المسجد. There is no prayer for the neighbor of the masjid except in the masjid. This is not a hadith, it's a statement of Ali ibn Abi Talib radiallahu an. So this shows us also, if you're right next to a masjid, then that masjid has rights for you to pray there. And that's the best, next best masjid for you to pray in. After that, the scholars, they say, the next best masjid, number four, if you like, would be those masjids which are far away. The masjids which are far away. Why? What's the benefit of praying in a masjid far away? Maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. Why? The reward. The reward of going to those masajid. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, the greatest people in terms of reward with regards to salah أَبْعَدُهُمْ فَأَبْعَدُهُمْ مَمْشَى are the ones that are further away for a person to walk towards, or to travel by whichever means. But the ones which are further away, the person gets more reward for going to those masajid and attending the salawat for those places which are further away. And the Prophet said, that's because when one of you performs wudu and he perfects his wudu and then he comes to the masjid not wanting anything else except for the salah, meaning he's not coming to meet somebody or for other purposes or other benefits, he's coming only for the salah, no footstep does he take except that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala raises his ranks. And Allah removes by each footstep a sin that he has committed until he enters the masjid. So this shows us that the further away the masjid, the more reward a person will get. So it's almost like the counter to a person not wanting to go to the masjid. You know, sometimes a masjid may be far from where he lives. The closest masjid might be, 20-minute drive, for example, half an hour, maybe sometimes when it's busy. This is an encouragement, it's motivation. The further the masjid is, inshallah, the more reward you'll get. Then, the next on the list of those masjid that you should frequent and go to are the ones which have the most congregation. The ones which have the most numbers of people in the congregation. So number one was those who don't have a congregation. Okay, number five, those masajid that have the most numbers of people in their congregation. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, a prayer of a man with another man is better than him praying by himself. And the prayer of a person with two people is better than him praying with one person. And whatever is more than this, then that's more beloved to Allah. The more people that are praying in a masjid, the more reward there is for that person to pray in that masjid because of the numbers. But like we said, if there are other masjids closer where, the masjid is really struggling, going to those masjids, inshallah, to revive the congregation in those masajid is better. So that's with regards to which masajid should be frequented, which masajid should be visited. Also, if you're praying in a masjid, or let's say you're praying in someone's home, somebody else's home, not your home, and you're going to pray in congregation, it's haram for you to lead the salah in a masjid. Okay, this is specifically for a masjid, in a masjid, and even in somebody's house, to be honest, it's haram for you to pray as the imam and lead the salah in a masjid if that masjid or that place where you're praying already has an imam who's supposed to lead the salah. With obvious exceptions, what would those exceptions be? If, for example, it's understood that if the imam is late, somebody else can lead. That's fine, okay. But if it's salah time, 7:30 salah time is Isha here. Straight away, somebody comes forward at 7:30 and just puts everyone aside and says, "I'm going to lead the salah," okay, and give the iqama. That's not permissible. It wouldn't be allowed. Because the imam has rights. He has more right to praying the salah and leading the salah in that masjid. Likewise, if you were at somebody's house, the Prophet ﷺ, he said, no man should lead the salah and be the imam in another man's domain, except by his permission. And that could be a masjid where there's a prescribed imam whose job it is to lead the salah, and everyone knows that's his job, that's his role. He leads all the prayers, or he leads Fajr and Dhuhr and Asr, for example, or whatever the case may be. It's known, okay, he's been designated as the imam by the trustees or by the owner or by the committee or whoever it is who's responsible for the masjid. Or if you're in somebody's house, you're a guest at somebody's house, and you want to pray together. There's a few of you, your friends, you're together with them, five of you in the house. Salah time comes, and someone gives you iqama, and you just go forward, and you say, I'm going to lead the salah. Okay, and the guy whose house it is, you know, is thinking, what's happening here? That wouldn't be allowed. Unless he gives permission. If he gives permission, that's fine. If he says, lead the salah, that's fine. But he would have rights, because it's his house, it's his domain. So it would be his right to lead the salah in those circumstances. Obviously, the exception being, if that person has been given permission, there are narrations of sometimes the Prophet ﷺ being delayed. Narrations mention that once the Prophet ﷺ was with the Banu Amr tribe reconciling some issues they had. So he was there and he was delayed. And so Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu prayed the salah, led as the imam. On another occasion, Abdurrahman ibn Auf radiallahu anhu was there in the congregation and he led the salah because the Prophet ﷺ was occupied in the Battle of Tabuk. And when the Prophet ﷺ heard that Abdurrahman ibn Auf radiallahu anhu led the salah, when he was told by the companions, he said to them, Ahsantum, you've done well. Meaning it was good what you did. So obviously, if the imam is delayed, if there's a genuine reason why the imam isn't able to lead the salah, then it's permissible for somebody else to lead the prayer. And normally masajid will have a second imam or a third imam, or the mu'adhin will lead the salah, for example. So in those cases, of course, it would be permissible. Also, another issue, if he attends the masjid and he's already prayed, let's say he prayed dhuhr at the start time, and he wasn't expecting to go to the masjid, and then he makes his way to the masjid, it's recommended for him, as we said, to go to the congregation and join the congregation. The Prophet ﷺ, he said, "Salli salah li waqtiha." Pray the prayers at their times. فَإِنْ أُقِيمَتْ, if the prayer has been established, وَأَنْتَ فِي الْمَسْجِدِ, and you're in the masjid, meaning you've already prayed somewhere, and you're in the masjid, and the iqama has been given, don't say, إِنِّي صَلَّيْتُ فَلَا أُصَلِّي. Verily, I've prayed, so I'm not going to pray. He said, don't say that. Join the congregation. So, if you're in the masjid and there's a congregational prayer taking place and you're thinking, I've already prayed dhuhr, I'm not going to pray dhuhr, I've already prayed dhuhr. So you see at the back, for example, that's not the sunnah. The sunnah is you should attend the salah, you should pray with the congregation, and it would be considered an optional prayer for you, a nafil prayer for you, because you've already prayed previously. Also, another issue, if the iqama has gone for the salah, if the iqama has gone for the salah, and you're praying nawafil prayers, let's say you're praying the two rakahs before fajr, for example, or let's say you're praying the four rakahs before dhuhr, or you're praying tahiyatul masjid, and the iqama is going for the salah, what should you do? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said, "Idha uqimat as-salah, fala salata illa al-maktuba." If the iqama for the salah has gone, then there is no salah except for the obligatory prayer that's about to begin, that the iqama is going for. So what does this mean? The scholars, they said, depending on which part of the salah you're in, you either finish the salah, you break the salah, or you continue the salah. They said, if the iqama goes, and you've done one rakah, for example, then if you feel like you're going to be able to finish the salah before the imam begins the salah, so let's say you're in the second rakah and you're standing, the iqama goes, the iqama starts. If you're able to finish the salah, make it a light rakah now, so it's not going to be as long as maybe you would normally have it, so shorten the rakah, okay, because you want to attend the salah from the takbiratul ihram. As long as you're able to finish the salah before the imam begins the salah, then inshallah, that's fine. And again, there's khilaf on this issue. Some of the scholars say, as long as you make the rakah, then you can complete your salah. So if you do see people, for example, praying two rakahs prior to the imam beginning, for example, the salah, or after he's started the salah, some scholars say that's permitted, but it's better for a person to join the congregational prayer as soon as the imam has started by joining the takbir al-ihram, because you know you want to get the full reward of the salah of the imam. So if the person is finishing his salah and the rows are being made, then he can finish the salah and he can just join that prayer. If he's just started the nafil prayer, because he just entered the masjid, didn't realize they're about to give the iqama. He's just started, then the iqama goes, and he knows he's not going to be able to finish the salah in time now because he's just started. Then he just breaks the salah. He just finishes his salah, breaks the salah there and then, and he joins the congregation. And if you break the salah, you don't give salam. You just put your hands down and you just make your way to the congregational salah. Because taslim is specifically for the end of the salah. Muftatihum bit takbir, muqtatimum bit taslim. You begin the salah with takbir, you end the salah, you seal the salah with taslim, with the salam. So you don't need to give salam, you just leave the salah and you join the congregational prayer. And the Prophet ﷺ, he said, Man adraka raka'a min as-salah. Whoever makes the raka'a of the salah, faqad adraka raka'a, faqad adraka salah. Then he's made the salah. Whoever's made the raka'a of the salah, then he's made the salah. So this shows us if a person is able to make the salah, that's fine. And if a person is able to lighten the salah, that is praying before the congregational prayer, that's permissible also. Lastly, we'll speak about rulings related to a person who is in the congregational prayer and he joins late. So he joins after the imam has begun, and maybe he's joined in the second or third or fourth rak'ah. So the salah of the masbuq, in Arabic they call it the masbuq, the one who attends the salah later. Of course, if any rak'ahs are missed by this person, then he makes up those rak'ahs after the imam finishes. He makes those rak'ahs after the imam finishes. And based on the hadith we just mentioned, whoever makes a rak'ah, then he's made the salah. Scholars say if he comes at the shahud, for example, he hasn't made the rak'ah. He hasn't made the rak'ah, so he has to stand up and he has to pray the salah again. And of course, some scholars will say because he hasn't made any rak'ahs, his salah is basically separate to the congregational prayer because he hasn't made the rak'ah itself. Also, the issue of if you join the prayer and the imam is in ruku', have you joined the salah, have you joined the rak'ah or have you not joined the rak'ah? If the imam is in ruku', then if you join the salah while the imam is in ruku', then you've made the rak'ah also. You've made the, and there's khilaf on this issue, but if you join the salah and the imam is in ruku', and you join while the imam is in ruku', then you've made the rak'ah also. As long as he hasn't said, Sami'a Allahu liman hamida. So as long as you make that position in ruku', then you've made the rak'ah. Another issue, if you're joining the salah and the imam is in ruku', do you have to give takbir twice? Or you just give takbir once? Because when you're joining the salah, the first takbir is takbir al-ihram. Second takbir to go into ruku'. So both are permissible. You can make takbir to start the salah, Allahu Akbar, and then Allahu Akbar again to go into ruku'. And you don't have to put your hands on your chest because you're going into ruku' straight away. So you say Allahu Akbar and then you say Allahu Akbar again to go into ruku'. And if a person makes takbir al-ihram and it's takbir al-ihram as well as him going into ruku', and he says it once, just one takbir, that's also permissible because the imam's already in ruku'. So he can just make one takbir and he can go into ruku', and that's permissible also. So that's with regards to a person coming late, to the salah. If he makes the ruku' of the imam, then he's made the rak'ah and he doesn't have to worry about making that rak'ah, up. Also, the issue of if he comes late and the imam is finishing and he's sitting with the imam and then the imam gives salam, when do you stand up? Do you stand up after the first taslim? Or do you stand up after the second taslim? So again, differences of opinion amongst the scholars. Some scholars say after one taslim, the salah is finished. Meaning if a person came and the imam gives one salam, you can't run and sit down and say, I've joined because you didn't do the second salam and you can carry on praying. You can't do that. Salah's over. That's it. So based on that, some of the scholars, they say after the first taslim, okay, you can stand up. Other scholars say, to be on the safe side, let the imam completely finish, make both taslims, and then stand up. Inshallah, that's better for a person to do that also. It's more in line with the hadith, إِنَّمَا جُعْلَ الْإِمَامُ لِيُؤْتَمَّ بِهِ. The imam is there for you to follow. So you follow the imam until he completely finishes. But if a person was to stand up after one taslim, that's permissible also. That's allowed. Because technically the salah would be finished. So that's with regards to a person who attends late and when he finishes or doesn't finish with the imam, when does he stand up after the taslim. Finally, if the imam is being prayed behind, there are certain states in which a person may either go ahead of the imam or be delayed with regards to catching up with the imam or following the imam. And the scholars, they say there's four different circumstances, four different states. The first state is when he precedes the imam. So the imam is about to go into sajda, and you go right down into sajda before he makes takbir. And you're in sajda before him. So kids, you know, you see kids do this. And they'll see the imam going about to go into sajda, and they'll just quickly go down and do sajda before the imam. Of course, they're children, so it's, you know, it's not, they're not accountable. But an adult, if he precedes the imam and he goes into ruku before the imam goes into ruku, before the imam is in that position, that's impermissible. It's haram. If a person does this, it's not permissible for a person to do this. And if he does do it, then, and it's intentional, then it's haram and his salah is invalid. Why? Because the imam is there for you to follow. إِنَّمَا جُعَلَ الْإِمَامُ لِيُؤْتَمَّ بِهِ. Literally, imam means the one in front, the one ahead of you. So he leads, you follow. So if you are ahead of the imam, then that's something which would break your salah if it was done intentionally. What if it was done unintentionally, out of ignorance, or basically you forgot? Then his salah is still valid. But he should try his best to stop himself from going into that position until the imam goes in that position. So for example, let's say the imam's going into sajda and you start going into sajda before he said anything. By the way, when do you start moving? When the imam moves or when the imam says takbir? Takbir. Takbir. When he makes takbir, that's the signal for you to start for you to move. So if the imam starts moving and you start moving and he hasn't said anything and you realize, oh, I'm basically going ahead of the imam, then you wait, okay, until the imam is ahead of you, and then once he makes takbir, then you can follow. So that's the general ruling. If, for example, you did it out of ignorance, wait until he's ahead of you and then he makes takbir and then you carry on. And if you're able to, let's say you're about to go down and he hasn't said anything, just stay standing, stay still, don't need to move. Until the imam makes takbir, then you can move. Okay, so for example, if you're in the first row and you can see the imam doing sajda, you can't move until the imam has made takbir. Then you can go down. As we said, based on the hadith, إِنَّمَا جُعْلَ الْإِمَامُ لِيُؤْتَمَّ بِهِ. The imam is there for you to follow. So don't, he said, the Prophet said, don't do ruku until he does the ruku. And don't do sujood until he does sajda. So this is the hadith and the instructions of the Prophet ﷺ. The second state is when a person follows the imam. Is this allowed? Yes, this is actually the sunnah. This is a sunnah, that you follow the imam. Al-mutaba'ah. So the imam goes down first and then you follow. This is a sunnah. This is the correct method. The third is muwafaqa. What does this mean? This means you do it at the same time. So the first one is when you go ahead of the imam. This is when you're doing it, you're synchronizing. You know, people who do synchronized swimming and, you know, those kinds of things all together. So the imam is there and you're literally copying the imam exactly, movement by movement. You're like synchronized with him. You're doing it exactly the same time. That's not allowed. It's not something which is permissible. It doesn't invalidate your salah, but it's disliked for a person to synchronize and to do it exactly the same time as the imam. So he's not going ahead, but he's not waiting for the imam. He's trying to do it at the same time. That's something which is disliked. Salah is valid, but it's not something which is from the sunnah, and it's something which is makruh, it's disliked. The fourth state is a delay. And it's a long delay. So what do you mean by a long delay? Again, there's different categories. So a person, for example, he's delayed. First of all, he's delayed for no specific reason. He doesn't have a reason to be delayed. The imam goes into sajda and he's just standing. Okay. He wants to be the last one to go into sajda for whatever reason. Okay, there's no reason for him to be delayed. So the imam goes into sajda and he's delayed, but he makes it in time to reach sajda before the imam comes out of sajda. If that happens, that's fine. However, it's going against the sunnah. Sunnah is you don't delay, because common sense, if you delay, what might happen? You might miss the pillar, the sajda or the ruku or the standing, etc. So it goes against the sunnah, because you know there's a risk of your salah being in jeopardy. So if a person does it for no reason, but is able to make that pillar of the salah, that rukun of the salah, whether it's the sajda or whatever position it may be, before the imam moves on to the next position, then that's fine. if he doesn't have a reason. If he has a reason, okay, for example, he didn't hear the imam, then he makes the position before the imam goes into the next position, that's fine. It's not considered khilaf of the sunnah, because he didn't know, didn't realize what was happening, didn't realize what was going on. Now, if the person deliberately stands while the imam is in sajda and the imam comes out of sajda, what does a person do in this situation? His salah's invalid. If it's done intentionally. Okay, intentionally meaning he knew what he was doing. Okay, it wasn't because he didn't hear the imam, or because, you know, there was some issue with the speaker system, whatever the case may be, you know, or he was extremely tired. For example, extreme tiredness, you know, he didn't realize what was going on, for example. If he was fully aware and the imam moved on to the next position and he missed the sajda, for example, his salah is invalid. He has to repeat the salah again. So he can continue praying with the imam if he wishes to, or he can leave. Yeah. But either way, the point is he has to repeat the salah again. Now, if a person doesn't know and he has a genuine reason, like we said, what does he do in this situation? Let's say the imam's come up from sajda and he's still standing after ruku. The imam has come up from sajda, he has no idea what's going on. A cut in the sound system. Okay, a person's praying elsewhere, some masjids, you know, you have multiple rooms, you don't hear properly. What do you do in that situation? The scholars, they say, if he didn't realize, and then he hears, and then he realizes we've missed, you know, a few of the positions, then he catches up with the imam. So he does the sajda, sits up again, does sajda, the imam's reciting Fatiha, he didn't realize what was going on, he catches up with the imam. And then he continues with the imam. The only exception is if the imam has actually joined the position he was originally in. That makes sense. For example, the imam was in sajda, he's still standing after performing ruku, he was with the imam went into sajda, he didn't hear anything. He doesn't hear anything until the imam comes up from ruku in the second rak'ah. So a whole rak'ah has gone by, and he's still standing there. The person praying behind the imam is still standing there. And now he's joining the second rak'ah, and then he realizes this is the second rak'ah. Or maybe he doesn't realize until the end of the salah, when the imam doesn't get up. And he's thinking, that's what happened. I missed a whole rak'ah. I was standing up waiting. In this situation, what do you think he should do? If he's met the imam in the same position in the second rak'ah, when the imam finishes his salah, this person has to complete the salah. So he stands up and he prays the rak'ahs that he's missed, or the rak'ah which he missed. So those are the different circumstances and situations of a person who is praying behind the imam. And with that, inshallah, we'll be concluding. Jazakumullah khair. Any questions before we finish? Yeah. So if you're reciting and the imam goes into ruku, you have to follow the imam. Cut off whatever you're reading. Yeah. No, he completes the prayer. He completes the prayer. So if he joins late and he's already prayed Dhuhr, for example, and the imam, he makes three rak'ahs with the imam, then he prays the fourth one by himself. So any questions you have online, the iPad's not working today. So inshallah, post them and then we'll arrange a means by which we can answer the questions at some point before Ramadan, or hopefully before Ramadan, inshallah, not after Ramadan, inshallah. Any other questions? Jazakumullah khair. Subhanakallahumma bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.